This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Warwick Long on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
And today, Warwick Long, as students, probably most of them skipped off to school as you waved goodbye to them at the front gate of their schools. There are actually other students today that we are going to talk about on the Conversation Hour, and that is our international students. Now, our international students here in Victoria have been hugely affected by coronavirus. There's been no financial assistance. Many have lost their part-time work. There's been no access to their campus, and many have lost their accommodation as well. But Warwick, when we think about international students in this state, I dare say that most of us think about the economic impact that they have on our economy, the money that they bring to our state. So today we're going to look at what else do international students bring other than their cash?
And certainly the money is an easy thing to focus on. Higher education, Rochelle, is one of our biggest exports. In 2016-17, it was a $19 billion industry. And just over the weekend, we saw figures from the regional universities network saying that they're standing to lose hundreds of millions of dollars in fees. We're talking more than $100 million for Central Queensland University, $64 million in loss of revenue for Charles Sturt University. The list goes on. And you hear those big figures, and you forget real people are involved, don't you? These are people's lives that have been put on hold. They don't necessarily fall into government assistance, and they can't easily travel around the world at the moment. This is real people being affected in a very real way, and it's around the corner from our homes. It's in our cities. It's in the country. It's everywhere at the moment.
You just have to look at the vacancy rate of apartments in the inner city of Melbourne. I don't know how that's affecting the regions, but there is a huge glut of rentals at the moment because international students either aren't able to study or aren't travelling and coming over here to study at the moment. We're seeing huge lines of students wrapping themselves around the streets trying to just get a little parcel of food because they've lost their part-time job and they simply can't afford to put food on their table. But when we look at international students from our city to our suburbs, to our regions, it is more that we stand to lose than just that the finances was. They bring with them their culture, their stories, their individuality that they bring to our communities, to our schools and to our workplaces. So that's what we're going to explore today on The Conversation Hour. And we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you're an international student. Maybe you were an international student and now you've called Victoria home. Maybe you've had an international student live with you in the past.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour
with Rochelle Hunt and Warwick Long.
And it's a very happy parent of a grade one who farewelled my student back to school this morning speaking to you here. But today we're talking about students you might have forgotten about who will find it hard to return back to their studies. Found it hard during this period itself. That is international students. And if you've got an experience with international students, either through your home, your workplace, or you are one yourself, we'd love to hear from you today. 1300 222 774.
Lara Carton is from CQ Uni. She's the Associate Vice President for Victoria. Lara, this is something that's very close to your heart. I know that you, your university, have been affected and you've been trying really hard to assist our international students with everything from food to accommodation. What's the process been like for you and what have you witnessed?
Good morning, Rochelle. Look, it's been a tough time for international students in Victoria, but across Australia more broadly. Certainly what we've seen, we've got about 3,000 international students studying at our Melbourne campus from nearly 50 nationalities, so such a range of diversity and backgrounds. And we've really seen that they are struggling with finances at the moment. Like many people, they've lost jobs, uncertainty around when they might get jobs back again. Importantly, they're worried about their studies. They've invested time and a lot of money to come to Australia to get a high quality education. And all of a sudden, where they were reliant on studying at a campus and having that day-to-day interaction with academics and support staff, now they're largely working from home and trying to study online and not always really well equipped to do that. And then you overlay that with the concern that they have for families back in their home country that they just can't get back to see, and worried about how that's going to affect their family, and also often how it's going to affect their ability to finance their study in Australia. And, you know, they really are, like so many people at the moment, facing such a broad range of worries. From our point of view, one of the big things that we've been able to do to support them, and you mentioned it, is we've been feeding them. So very fortunate to have been able to set up a partnership with Second Bite and to be feeding hundreds of students a week through a food bank. But I'd love to say that we could do more, and certainly accommodation and technology and all of those other things, we've been looking to see how we can provide supports. But, you know, they're not a homogenous group. International students have such a different range of concerns. Not each has the same concerns and pressures. And so it really is understanding at an individual level how we can support students rather than applying blanket measures.
How quickly did the COVID-19 restrictions and the spread around the world start to affect the international student body?
Look, I think we saw very early on that it affected students travelling to Australia from China, and that's understandable as we looked to close down that entry to Australia. From our point of view, we don't have a lot of Chinese students studying with us at CQ University, but we do have a number of students studying from other areas, predominantly South Asia, so India and Nepal and Sri Lanka. And we didn't see those entries to Australia close down in quite the same way, but there was obviously a lot of uncertainty. So we saw, you know, good numbers of our students come to Australia, which we were delighted by. The challenge now is to really support those students who managed to come to Australia and start their studies or return to their studies before the border closures took place, and really see how we can support them. But certainly, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the media about the downturn in the international student numbers and the flow-on effects it's having to universities, but also to the broader economy. And, you know, international students help to support so many people in jobs across Australia. So it is having a very widespread impact.
Lara Carton is with you. She's the Associate Vice President for Victoria for CQ University. 1300 222 774. You can text as well, 0437 774 774. Lara, when we do talk about international students, quite often the next line that you hear is the huge impact that they have on the Victorian economy, the amount of money that they bring to our state. And I guess the fact that we see them as dollars and not as people has never been more apparent than when this global pandemic has hit. You know, many of them have been left without food, they've been left without shelter, they've been left without somewhere to go, and they're unable to return home. How are they feeling at the moment when you're speaking to them and they're lining up for food and they're feeling really displaced at the moment? What kind of emotional impact is this having on many of the students that you speak with?
Look, it is having quite a significant impact. We've certainly seen an increase in demands on our counselling services and a range of other support services for students. I have to say, one of the lovely things about running a food bank at the campus has been the ability to welcome students back to the campus with appropriate social distancing measures so that we can have face-to-face conversations with students about difficult subjects. So asking them how they're going, how their studies are going, how their family's going has been really important to keep that continuity of the relationship up. And, you know, international students, by their very nature, I think, are amazingly resilient. I think to get yourself to another country, to have the years or at least months of planning to do that, to have the emotional and the mental wherewithal to leave your home and your family and be so focused on building a career for yourself through getting a better education. Our students are already really resilient, but they're being hit hard by this. They're worried about the impact of studying and whether they'll be able to achieve the grades that they wanted to achieve through their degrees, because now they're studying online and that takes time to get used to. They're worried about if they've had to maybe drop a unit or two what that will do in terms of the amount of time it will get them, take them to get through their studies. And of course, then they're worried about how do they put food on the table? How do they pay their rent? How do they pay their living costs? And so we are seeing that that anxiety levels are going up, and as we get to the end of semester and we're seeing assessments come in, I think we'll continue to see more concerns from students academically. But certainly our ability to get to know our students and being a relatively small cohort of a couple of thousand means that we do already have those personal relationships with students. And I think that's what's really an advantage for our students and also for us, because we've got a better sense of how they need to be supported individually rather than, as you say, looking at international students as a homogenous group. You know, in the thousands and the dollars.
How many students would you say are taking advantage of the food bank service that you're offering? How many are you feeding?
Look, we are seeing a couple of hundred every week. So we deliver, or we have food available on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Students register in advance and they come in and collect it. And it's a beautiful array of frozen food and fresh food. And you know, on any given day, we can see over 150 students come in a sort of 3 or 4 hour window. So that's a bit of a logistic exercise to try and keep all of those students spread out. But that, to me, just demonstrates how hard it is for students to be able to pay for food, and the look of relief on students' faces when they come in and they see that there's food available. They don't have to think about where that next meal is coming from, just to be able to take that anxiety from them, I think also helps them to focus more on their studies.
It's interesting. At the beginning of this conversation, Warwick, you spoke about the idea that sometimes we do see international students as dollar figures, as money, as a huge impact to our economy. Now, that is important, but it is very easy to forget that these are individuals with individual stories. And as a result of coronavirus and COVID-19, it's having a huge impact on them. But when we think about them as students, students go on to become professionals or working people in so many different aspects of our lives. And today, a little bit of what we want to talk about is how international students then just become a part of our community. They live in our suburbs, our regions, and our cities. 1-300-222-774. How do they, I guess, become a big part of our community and influence what we do? Mariam Omar is a Kuwait-born Palestinian and started out as a student and is now a huge part of our lives here in Melbourne, and in particular in the cricketing world. Mariam, welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Hi all. Thanks for having me.
I guess you would have been following what a lot of international students are going through at the moment. Your heart would have been breaking watching people line up for food, not being able to go onto campus, not being able to get home to family members.
Oh, it's definitely, of course, like it's really heartbreaking to see, you know, just the extent of what COVID-19 has actually put our students through. And it's really heartbreaking in I mean, the university is doing a great job with providing like the food banks and all these other solutions for students to cope. So that such things are really important.
How tight are things when you are an overseas student studying in Australia? What was that like when you were doing it?
For me in particular, it was a slightly different story. I actually was lucky enough to get a scholarship. Coming from Kuwait, I used to study at the Australian College of Kuwait and wanted to come over here to Australia to do my master's program. And I got a scholarship that would sort of cover most of my tuition fee, provided I, you know, just maintain the distinction and above. So I had to sort of really, really focus on my studies. And I knew that, you know, I would sort of be covered in terms of my tuition fee. But in terms of, like, living expenses, I had to sort of, you know, find a way to go through it. Of course, I had a bit of a family support, but I really wanted to be independent. So I looked around and started looking for jobs. And the university was always there to support and help. So ended up working at the university, took up different roles in the library, some leadership roles and stuff like that, and it worked well for me. So, yeah.
Now, you're a civil and structural engineer. You've worked on all projects that are so vital to our city and how we work, from the Westgate Tunnel through to the Metro Tunnel, level crossing removals. You're a part of that as well. On top of it, you're a passionate cricketer. And since moving to Melbourne, you've been drafted for the Dandenong Cricket Club. You're also trying to help, I guess, promote women's cricket as well. Did you always intend, when you started out as an international student here in Melbourne, to live and to be such a strong part of our community and to remain here?
To be honest, I didn't really think that it was a plan to start with. I wasn't really focusing on staying here in Australia. My focus was more about the type of the opportunities that were presented to me here in Australia and how well they aligned with my short-term and long-term goals. And then based on that, I sort of made the decision of, well, it was working well for me, so I'd rather stay. So, yeah, I really value contribution. And for me, it really shaped my life quite significantly, I must say. I mean, starting off as an international student and then, you know, through my engineering program at Central Queensland University, I really used all the tools that were provided to me. And, you know, through a mandatory work placement, which sort of landed me a permanent job, which is quite awesome, right? And now I'm working as a civil engineer at Pitt and Cherry. We're involved with, like, you know, lots of exciting projects and important infrastructure. So just like you mentioned, the likes of the Westgate Tunnel, the level crossing removals, Metro, Melbourne Metro and all of that. I mean, all these things are quite, like, amazing for me to kind of be involved in. And it just kind of reminds me of how important it is for us to kind of, you know, push through and stay positive and look around, you know, just cover ourselves with the right circle and you know, just be resilient. All these sorts of tools are really important.
Do you worry, and I guess we've had conversations about this on this program, about racism that many people have faced as a result of coronavirus, then on top of it, just the financial hardships that many international students will be facing. Do you think that many people will now think twice about coming to Australia and starting families, starting careers, and making a home for themselves in regional and suburban Victoria?
I think this can be a really tricky question because, I mean, during this pandemic, we witnessed, you know, a bit of racism targeted to some of, you know, different students or people from different backgrounds. But, you know, the true essence of, you know, this COVID-19 situation, it really taught us some lessons. And it's, in this sort of game, it's not us versus them or it's not them versus whoever. It's we're all in this together. So if one party really just, you know, collapses or crashes, we're all in this. And it's really important for us to kind of come together as communities. And it's as for students, to be honest, I'm not really sure because I was, it's hard to say, but I was faced with a bit of racism a couple of times. But, you know, just I've literally grew thicker skin and I've become much more resilient. And staying positive, I think that's what took me through it. I knew I was here for a reason. I knew I had I had long-term goals, I had short-term goals, and I was focused. So, yeah, a few things come in the way, but I guess that's life, isn't it?
And Mariam, are you back training for football yet, or is that on the horizon?
well, not yet. I actually took up AFL footy last season, and I thought it would be a great switch from cricket and just to kind of learn a new skill, given I'm in Australia, and it's quite popular as well. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. For this season, it's been put on hold because of this whole COVID situation. But the girls are keen to go out and have a kick. So I might actually join them in a few coming weeks. So, yeah.
Well, good luck. Good luck. We hope to hear how you're going anyway. But it's been wonderful to talk to you, Mariam. Mariam, thanks for joining us. That's Mariam Omar, Kuwait-born Palestinian who's been in Australia, as you heard, and doing some amazing things, not only in the work environment, but on the sporting field as well.
Arthur's called from Yakandanda. Arthur, welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Yeah, thank you.
What do you want to say?
Some of your fairly older listeners may remember, but I do. We used to have international students come to Australia many years ago under the Colombo Plan. And that was a plan whereby that was part of our aid system. We gave scholarships to students overseas, brought them to Australia to study at our universities, and they were billeted with Australian families. Now, if we've got a whole bunch of poor kids who are stuck here, I don't think it would do them any harm to live with Australian families for a while.
There's been a big shift, hasn't there? I mean, in the sense now that when we think about international students, we think, okay, well, you have to have student accommodation in the heart of the city or close to the university in your regional city centre, and it's going to be some tiny little room where the toilet's quite possibly in the same room as your kitchen. And, you know, we don't think of them as living with families and being a part of our community. Do you think that would make a big difference?
I think it would make an enormous difference. The Colombo Plan students that went home to work and raise their country, and they had to go home and raise their country, they couldn't stay here, they had an enormously high idea of Australia and Australians, and they've now finally retired, but up to now, those people have backed Australia overseas by being high-flying people in their countries no end.
That's an interesting point you make there too, Arthur, because there is this on the text too on 0437 774 774 that says, we also lose respect from a global perspective on how we have treated these people in a time of need. That will affect tourism in the long run also, says that person on the text as well. Karen's called from Torquay as well on 1300 222 774. Hello, Karen.
Hi, how are you? I just want to comment also quickly on Arthur's brilliant phone-in. I agree with what he's saying, and I'm wondering whether the Rotary Clubs couldn't step up, because all their exchange student programs are on hold because of COVID-19, but there's a wealth of students struggling in Australia now from overseas that could probably benefit from some hospitality from a Rotary family that have an empty room and an empty bathroom. So I just wonder if that's another opportunity for the Rotary Club to show service above self. And that's something I'm going to be looking at for our family. But what I wanted to talk about with you was briefly that I know of one very large cafe in Sydney whose boss called everyone together, and he made the gut-wrenching decision that, you know, we have to close down and we're going to have to only short hours and takeaway. But he said to his staff, he said, I've worked out how I can share the hours, and I'm going to be sharing the hours with my international students and internationals who can't get any access to government aid, because I won't see anyone go hungry. All of my Aussies, according to your circumstances, whether you can get job seeker or job keeper, I will look after you. We are a family. We will reopen fully and be back together again. I will leave no one behind. But my moral compass tells me I have to look after these people, and they need to be supported, and our government isn't doing it. So we as a cafe will. And I just thought that was the most extraordinary rationale, and the fact that he brought all his staff together and explained himself, and he was in tears telling his family, his workers, this. But I thought, this is the spirit of real Australians who are taking everyone's circumstances into account before they make decisions and treating everyone with respect.
And these are just some of the many stories that we're hearing throughout this pandemic, is that there is a lot of good that's coming out of it. Karen, I like the idea of Rotary. I wonder how possible or how simple it is to be able to help students that find themselves without somewhere to live and to be able to go and spend time with the family. Lara Carton is with you as well, CQ University Associate Vice President for Victoria. Lara, would it be that simple, do you think, to be able to then maybe set up students that find themselves with nowhere to live and struggling to make ends meet with a family?
Look, I think it's an absolutely lovely idea, and I'm madly writing notes as your caller was speaking there. I think pressure on accommodation is something that we see a lot, and despite there being government requirements around keeping people in rental accommodation, we know that students can often be challenged around understanding rental laws, and finding the money to pay for rent now just adds to that. Honestly, if we could get students accommodated with Australian families, I think that that would be the best of both worlds. And I know Study Melbourne, the Victorian government arm that looks after international students and advocates for them, has got a great accommodation program where they are looking to provide emergency accommodation for students. And I think it'd be marvellous to see if we could bring Rotary into that as well.
And Larry, there's a lot of texts along these lines too, and I'd love to pick your brain if that's all right. The last one I can see is from Chris, saying, aren't international students supposed to have enough funds in the bank already to support themselves here? Isn't that a requirement? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, look, they are, but only for the first year that they study here. So one of the conditions of getting a visa to come and study here is that you have 12 months worth of living expenses, and all of our students do that. They provide evidence for every university or private training provider that they study with. But a degree program, an undergraduate program, is 3 years. A master's degree is 2 years. And so that evidence for 12 months only goes so far. So what we know is that students will often start working in their first year of study, and they'll do it because they want to become engaged with the community, to get to know what an Australian way of life is about, but also to start saving to fund their studies for their second or their third year of study as well. And so that's where we're seeing the pressure, that students are looking ahead, and those students who are already into their second or third year of degrees, who have been relying on their part-time jobs to be able to fund their studies and to be able to fund their living arrangements, that's where we're seeing the real pressure. Not so much from students in the first year, although of course they're concerned about how they'll fund studies in the outer years, but it's really those students who've been in Australia for more than a year or so and have probably run down a lot of that initial funding that they brought with them.
Lara, it's been great speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lara Carton, she's from CQ University, 1300 222 774. If you would like to join us, Robert has, he's called from Ripon Lee. Robert, welcome.
Welcome. I have three girls at the moment in homestay, all from China, one in first year university, the other in year 12, and the other in year 11. And I've been doing homestay now for international students for over 5 years. I've hosted well in excess of 100 students. So it's something that's very enriching for me as the homestay host. And
Robert, what would you say is the biggest misconception that a lot of people have about international students, given you've been so close to them for so many years?
Well, the misconception is that they're all living in terrible, drafty one bedroom dormitories, whereas they're living in the lap of luxury. My girls, they all have their own room. They have ducted heating. They're all very well catered for. They get three meals a day, and that's supplemented by the Chinese Uber service of Easy, who seem to be at my door every day with piles of Chinese food. And I think at the moment, the only thing that the girls have been complaining about is not being able to get to Tiffany and to the other shops to get, some great shopping in.
Oh, my Lord. They certainly are living a life of luxury. But, Robert, what about you? I mean, a part of this conversation today is about the fact that international students are a part of our communities, our towns, our suburbs, and they offer so much for us. How has it enriched your life and your community?
Well, it's enriched our life because, we now have, friends, from one end of the world to the other. My daughter who lives with us, who's 24, who's also going to university at the moment, has, developed a great network of being in a mentoring situation for these younger girls. And we all sit round the dinner table at night. We're at the moment, because we're all doing distance learning, I'm learning so much about, the university girl is doing journalism. And, the only thing I can't help with is new maths, but all the other things I can help with. But it is very enriching, every night sitting around discussing, assignments and things, and rewriting, from Chinglish to English. It's a great experience, and the girls themselves, they learn a lot about how Australians live, what our values are, what our culture is. I'm in the hospitality business, so I employ a lot of international. My kitchen crews are all Nepalese, so we have a great cultural experience of not only having them at home, but also having them at work. Is also a great experience, and I've also provided work experience for so many girls. I've taught them, my wife, who's a barista, has taught them, how to make coffee, and they are out now, working in cafes all around Melbourne, have adopted the, the Melbourne coffee culture.
Between the food deliveries, Tiffany, and the barista in your household, Robert, I am moving in alongside these women. Thank you so much for joining us, because it really does go to show, Warwick, that, you know, this is what we're talking about, that international students are a part of our community and often will stay on and become hugely integral to our schools, to our workplaces, whatever line of work it is that they have come here to be a part of. And that's what we're talking about today.
Let's hear from an international student right now. Wing Kwan is an international student at Melbourne Uni and can join us on the Conversation Hour. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, Warwick and Richelle. Nice to chat with you.
Wing, what's this situation been like for you? I mean, for months on end now, we've all been living in this crazy new world that is the pandemic that we're living through. What sort of impact has it had on you as an international student?
I guess I'm one of those very few privileged international students where my parents are still able to financially support me for my life and also study. So, but obviously, this whole pandemic does have reshaped my life at university. I stay at home to do distance learning. But also I do hear from my friends and classmates who are actually experiencing financial struggle because of this pandemic.
And what kind of struggle is that? Can you explain what your friends are going through?
Yeah, so some of them lose jobs, and some of them have just, because of the travel ban, they have to be stuck in their home countries, and they have to pay the rent here because their staff are still here, and they are not sure if they can actually come back next semester, and they have to continue the contract. So some of them are actually having like quite big financial crisis, mm-hmm. and the uni does provide funding and also like emergency fund for international students, but that's just not able to cover all of them.
And Wing, how stressful is it that to not even have the choice to be able to go home if you wanted to, whether that be to relocate back home, to check on family members, to check on elderly family members, and to not, I guess, to have that option taken away from you on top of everything else? How stressful has that been for you and for friends of yours?
I have to say it's been a really anxious time for me. I basically do FaceTime with my parents every day since the pandemic started. So a little bit about myself, I'm from Macau, and when I flew back to Australia to continue my study in January, it was actually the first news coming about the pandemic in China. So basically, I have just been in this whole anxiety of COVID-19 since January. And the fact that I am stuck in my home and not being able to see my friends until recently has actually affect my mental health a lot. And I think I'm also an upcoming graduate. I'm actually graduating in July, and it's just lots of uncertainty facing me about employment and economy in the world in general.
And Macau, where your family is, that's a massive tourist town. I imagine it's very quiet, or has been very quiet. Does that mean that there's a lot of difficulty facing even family back home?
Yeah, I do. So my parents were quite old. They have retired, but basically they were stuck at home. And I have watched videos that sent from my family groups where the streets of Macau are empty and all the casinos were closed. So for those who are not really familiar, Macau is really relying on casinos and tourism. And I was just so shocked to see this video because in my mind, Macau is always a really crowded and busy city.
And Wing, had you always planned on staying in Victoria, in staying in Australia once you graduate? Do you want to work here?
I'm not sure about this for all the time because, to be honest, I came to Australia at 17 and I've been here for almost 7 years. I basically just built all my friend circle here, and going back home, I just have no friends. So, of course, if I can stay in Australia, that would be a really great help for me. But as I said, there would be a global recession coming in because of this COVID-19. And we can see that Australia is facing such a high unemployment rate. A lot of my local friends are also struggling for jobs at the moment. I just don't know what Australia can do for me as a foreigner. And also back at home, the economy is not that great either because of COVID-19. So there are just lots of uncertainty.
Oh, there certainly is, isn't there? Wing, we wish you all the best with your graduation and throughout this pandemic as well, and to your family back home. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Wing Kwan, who is a Melbourne Uni student, she was also a little bit of an intern for us for just a week or two before COVID-19 hit, and really uncertain and unsure of what the future holds for her as an international student. 1-300-222-774. Melissa King is the president of the International Education Association of Australia. And Melissa, you've been listening to these stories. I mean, I guess you can never predict something like a global pandemic, but I mean, how supported are international students throughout something like this?
Yeah, hi, Rochelle. International students have had support at various levels. State governments have, in the main, been pretty generous and have been supporting our students through various funds, and certainly at the institutional level, there's been various initiatives, including financial hardship funds, food pantries, and importantly, academic support, which I think tends to get overlooked in all of this. But, you know, students have been able to reduce their load, which is important because that reduces the stress and the pressure on them to perform during a time when they've had to shift pedagogically from face-to-face learning to online learning, and that's an enormous transition for them. And, you know, other things like numeracy and literacy support. And then, of course, you've got the support in the communities. The local community organisations and charities have been particularly important. Sometimes international students won't present themselves as needing help to their institutions, and so it can often be the case that a student may be struggling and we may know nothing about that student's needs. So when they do present themselves to local community organisations and charities, they can also get support through that. So, yes, there is support. It's probably not enough in an ideal world. So, yeah, we're certainly conscious of the difficulties that our students are facing.
We've heard a lot today about people waiting in line for food at food banks. We've heard about also people on our text line offering up accommodation to students in need. What are some of the solutions in your mind, Melissa, on ways to help international students through this period?
Yeah, look, certainly the institutional level, I think, you know, certainly in the higher ed sector, which hosts about 50% of all international students, the institutions have been very generous in the main. Certainly in my own institution, we have a very popular food pantry, and we've been working with community groups to deliver that. But apart from that, you know, there are other things like fee deferral arrangements, just helping students come up with payment plans. Obviously, if their parents at home are also impacted by loss of jobs, etc., it's very difficult for students to be able to meet fee payment requirements. So having some flexibility around that. I think also in the community, community organisations can be really helpful, because the difficulties that our students are facing are not only just financial. You can imagine that they are isolated. They are living with great anxiety. I think, Rochelle, you mentioned earlier that it is difficult for our students not to be able to go and see their parents or their grandparents and know that they are okay during these difficult times. And so they're living with those stresses as well. So having a welcoming community can go a long way to alleviating so much of the anxiety that international students feel, as well as the isolation and loneliness.
And I think on top of that, I mean, you mentioned before that maybe some students don't have the confidence to even line up for food and for food banks. And if that's something that you've never done before, you know, maybe you're still learning English as a second language, it actually takes a lot of guts to line up for food or to line up for assistance and say, I need help, I'm lost, I don't know what to do. So there's a lot of wraparound services that are needed here to ensure that these students are okay. Just finally, Melissa Banks is with you from the International Education Association of Australia. Looking at countries that will be potentially deemed safe for students to travel, and this is not until midway through next year, what sort of long-term impact or what term long-term loss of international students do you think we're likely to see in Victoria?
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, international students contribute so much to our society, and to lose just numbers of students is a big impact culturally, obviously financially, and economically. So not having a new intake coming in July this year, and throughout the year into the Alicost sector, for instance. So there are providers that probably will be looking at closure, either sort of temporarily or potentially permanently, because their business is based around, you know, teaching, you know, international students language and literacy in preparation for formal studies. So the impact on those providers is profound. Apart from just the providers, you've also got the whole international education ecosystem. So when students don't arrive for an intake, all the accommodation providers are impacted. There are food outlets that often accompany international student cohorts. So if you have a large intake of Chinese students, then you'll see Chinese restaurants opening up. If you have Vietnamese students, you'll see Vietnamese food outlets open up. And so, you know, there's quite an impact on the entire ecosystem. Tourism, a lot of our international students will travel during semester break, or even their families will come and join them during graduations.
Yeah, so the onflow effect is huge, isn't it?
It's massive, absolutely massive, yes.
It's so interesting to think about, not only when we put it as this issue of it being such a big export for Australia, it also involves people, and it's been good to remember that today. Thanks, Melissa. That's Melissa Banks, the President of the International Education Association of Australia, speaking to us there. You're listening to The Conversation Hour. As we look at international students, what they bring to our country, and also how are they being treated and what are they going through right now? 1300 222 774 if you'd like to join us.
Ritesh Chug is Indian Australian and is a part of CQ University as well. He graduated, he's also a senior lecturer now and is a huge part of our community. Ritesh, welcome to The Conversation Now. What made you not only come and study in Victoria but then decide to stay and be such a big part of our community?
Good morning, Rochelle and Warwick. Thank you for having me. Coming to Australia was a significant decision of my life and actually a life-changing one. I've now nearly spent half of my life in Australia. And my decision was based on the quality of education, safe surroundings, lack of pollution, job opportunities and medical facilities that Australia offers. Now, educational agents overseas play a very important role in shaping our choice when we're deciding on where to study as an international student. And I don't think it was any different for me. What was different for me, though, was I had a school-time friend who influenced my choice of Melbourne. So there was no debate of Melbourne versus Sydney. And now that I know coffee is better here, I know I made the right choice.
And Ritesh, I know you're highly involved within your local school as well at the moment, and you're trying to introduce Hindi language into primary schools to, I guess, help diversity and inclusion. I mean, you've had a badge of a Lay Law Hero Community Volunteer Award. when we talk about diversity and inclusion, and given how long you've been in Australia now, are we starting to make inroads, do you think?
We are, but see, the issues, some of the issues still remain. I have a lot of respect for international students, but having said that, one of the things that I feel, you know, we need to realise that international education in Melbourne enriches both domestic and international students. It prepares all students for a competitive global workforce where cultures and countries are connected, and they're connecting more rapidly than ever before. And, you know, if I talk about my own experience here, you know, I mean, I got my job through initially networking. So I started with a casual tutoring role, which I enjoyed. This led me to a love for teaching. I completed my PhD. To answer your question, do the issues exist? Well, I definitely feel they exist. You know, language barriers and cultural differences always exist. And it's up to the students to realize how they want to make best of the opportunities. You know, it's very important that students focus on developing careers and think of long-term goals, you know, rather than focusing on short-term goals. Once they understand the value of money, they focus on their studies. And I mean, if I talk of myself, you know, when I was studying, I actually set myself very high targets for achieving high grades. I mean, I really remember having a conversation with my dean at that time when I just finished my graduate diploma of information systems, and I said to her, I said, well, I'm going to set a target for myself and try and achieve 8 high distinctions to finish my master's. So that was the sort of goal setting that I did. But, you know, the problems exist. To develop as an international student, I think it's important for students to work on their communication and interpersonal skills. That is one of the most important things that I believe can help international students succeed. You know, technical skills can actually be learned on the job. But what employers are looking for is communication and interpersonal skills.
It's really good advice. Yeah. Ritesh, thank you so much for joining us. Ritesh Chugh, Indian-Australian, a huge part of his local community was trying to introduce Hindi language to his local primary school. He's been given awards. He's the Laylaw local community hero there. And we can start to see why, given the advice that he's given to us. You are on The Conversation Hour. We've been talking international students. Of course, locally, students are going back. You waved off your daughter this morning from the front door, but it wasn't that fist bump in the air. But it wasn't that long ago that we actually spoke to a group of Year 12 students here on this program to see what such a big and influential year for them is like, having to do that remotely. Greta Shannon is from Footscray High School and is one of those students. And Greta, you're now no longer remote and you're back at school. What's it like?
Well, I've only been at school for probably about 2 hours now, but I've just left my English class to have this interview, and I think the general mood is everyone is just ecstatic to be back and seeing everyone's smiling faces and, you know, you can get back into that collaborative nature of modern classroom learning that I know that heaps of us have missed over this period.
And just by being back, do you feel more confident about the getting through this year, this big Year 12 year?
Oh, yeah, 100%. A lot of my motivation for continuing to strive to better myself and work on my learning comes from my peers. So it's been great to, you know, be able to listen to classroom discussions and gain an insight into other students' perspectives on the topics that we're learning at school. And I think that's something that I really missed doing online schooling over the past 6 weeks.
And Greta, you're the SRC president. You're the representative for the SRC there. So I guess you have an important and interesting role when it comes to just the general well-being of other students. And we've been talking a lot about mental health and stress and anxiety that always goes hand in hand with Year 12 at the best of times. But once you add this pandemic to it, do you feel like the general anxiety level is heightened at the moment?
Well, obviously it's different for every student, but in my perspective, I am just really happy that we're back to some sort of normality now being at school. I mean, normality doesn't really exist at the moment with, you know, everything changing around us over the past couple of weeks.
Were you up to date with your work, Greta, when you walked back through the gate?
Oh, well, to be honest, I am a little bit behind, and I'm sure a lot of Year 12s like me and all the other students that are going back today maybe have, you know, been a bit behind because, you know, it's been so easy to, you know, take advantage of the system and stay in pyjamas all day and watch Netflix and just have the teacher on in the background. So, yeah, but hopefully in the next couple of weeks I'll be able to catch up and I'll get back into the swing of things.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it's like to have just Netflix so close at home when you're trying to study. It was hard enough with Oprah in the middle of the day in my school years. But Greta, when you walked through today, and as you say, you've only been back a couple of hours, but was there someone you saw and you thought, gosh, I didn't realise it, but I've missed being around this person for the last 8 weeks?
Oh, 100%. You know, one of my best friends, I saw her this morning as we're walking to school. And yeah, it was such a nice feeling to reunite with her and you know, I'm be able to see all my other friends at lunchtime today and go in the Oval, and obviously with, you know, social distancing still applying, but just it's been so nice, and I've been looking forward to this day for quite a while now, so I'm really glad that we're all back.
And Greta, just finally, does it feel strange being out and about, not being in pyjamas, you know, maybe having brushed your hair and just being in fresh air for longer than half an hour?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the first day in probably about a week or so where I've actually, you know, gotten out of bed at a reasonable hour and put proper clothes on and done my hair, put a bit of makeup on. So, yeah.
Back in the game.
It's a bit strange. Back in the game. Back into reality.
We wish you all the best, Anna. Thank you so much for stepping out of class. So much for the no mobile phone rule at school. Hey, was
yeah.
And make them call into the conversation. Now, Greta, we wish you all the best for your final year in
Thank
year 12.
You so much.
Good on you, Greta Shannon there from Footscray High School. Year 12 kids are so together these days. I was just not that switched on, I have to say.
I wrote down the sentence something like striving to be better and continue my learning, or it was something that Greta said, and I was thinking I don't think I could put together a sentence like that when I was in year 12. So luckily people like Greta are in the world to put us in a better place when we're a bit older. And hopefully we should all have some extra people in our minds when we think about how they're going at the moment, because hearing about people lining up at food banks and in desperate need for accommodation today was pretty hard going to know what's happening, you know, in our streets and in our state.
And I think what I found really rewarding today, and something that I'll take away, is that you have to remember that international students aren't just a huge impact on our finances, that they are individual stories and individual families, and are going through what we're going through with this global pandemic, but albeit from a distance from their families. So it was rewarding hearing those stories today. So thank you to everybody that rang in, and apologies to all the people that we didn't get to. You can always listen back. You can subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast, and you can email us anytime you like it. Conversation Hour at abc.net.au.